Tell me again about the good works of the Institute.
Well, you know, we're located on the beautiful shoreline of Muskegon Lake, and our mission is to integrate research, education, and outreach to preserve and enhance the freshwater resources of our region.
And good to include you in the Grand Valley State University family. Yule Professor of Water Resources, certainly the Alan and Helen Hunting Director, so keep up your good work. Dr. Steinman, here we go. How about this new grant from the NSF?
From the National Science Foundation to our molecular ecologist, Charlene Partridge. This is a major research instrumentation grant, so it can continue to build her genetic sequencing and genomic sequencing work here at AWRI, but really it's a sequencing lab for the entire university. So whomever wants to do any kind of gene sequencing can utilize the lab that we have here. But this new instrument that Charlene has been able to acquire allows us now to do high-throughput sequencing. So it gives us a whole new area of expertise, gives us much more information, some of the big data, and we're going to use it, can be used actually from anything from medical research for our health professionals to the environmental sciences. For us, you know, the way that we have, that Charlene proposed that it would be utilized, include some of the projects that she's been working on. And as we've talked about in the past, she's been focused on baby's breath, which most people think of as, a beautiful part of a wedding bouquet, but actually is an invasive species. And because it has a very long taproot, it grows in the coastal dunes here. It can actually stabilize the dunes, which is bad because these dunes, in order to really thrive, have to move. They're migrating dunes. And so we're very concerned, particularly up in Sleeping Bear Dunes National Park, that as these baby breath clusters have become established, they're starting to stabilize the dunes. So we're working with the Nature Conservancy to figure out what the genomics are of these different populations so that when we identify what works in terms of treating them and eradicating them, we want to make sure that those populations don't have a different genetic code than the other populations that may be more resistant. So this gives us just more information in that toolkit. And then, some of the stuff we're always working on here is the harmful algal blooms that everybody's concerned about. And now we'll be able to look, sometimes we'll have a bloom, two blooms in a lake. One will be toxic and one won't be. And we don't know why. And now we can look at the genomics of it to figure out whether they're actually different in terms of their gene structure or not. And that's going to be very powerful as well. And then finally, the project that we talked about last time, the microplastics that, is coming out of my lab. One of the elements that we're doing is we're starting to look at these microplastics. Not only are we looking at the chemicals that attach to them, so when organisms like fish come along and maybe ingest these plastics, they're not just getting these physical blockages in their system, but they may also be ingesting chemicals, which we may get if we eat the fish. But we want to know what kind of organisms are attaching to the plastic, not just the chemicals. And so now we're going to be able to do the genomics on these organisms, different kinds of bacteria, different kinds of algae, potentially different kinds of viruses that will then, when they start to basically attach the biofilm to the plastic, then the chemicals attach to the organisms. And so there's this kind of, no pun intended, a sequence of events that goes on here, and we want to know how we can prevent this from happening. And this kind of genetic information allows us to probe a little deeper. And it's a great training tool. I mean, this is really where the future of environmental science and biology is going. And so having this kind of sequencer allows our undergraduate and graduate students to have hands-on work and experience dealing with the kind of stuff that really is going to be of help for them in future jobs.
That's great. Talking to Dr. Alan Steinman again with us on behalf of the Annis Water Resources Institute. Hey, you're back from your sabbatical. Back into the groove of things?
Not quite yet, but I'm doing my best.
Would you talk about the major products, including the Science, Music, Dance Collaborative Performance in Progress that you're working on when it comes to your book?
There were two major products that were supposed to emerge from the sabbatical. One actually did occur so far. The book is still a work in progress. I'll talk about it in a minute. But, I think we talked about this last year very briefly. I've been involved for the last year and a half with just a wonderful collaboration with our professor of piano here at Grand Valley, Dr. Suk Young Cho, and our professor of dance, Hannah Seidel. And together, the three of us put together, we got funding from the university as well as the Community Foundation for Muskegon County, to put on this performance. Original choreography, original music, musicians from Grand Valley and dancers from Grand Valley, as well as Hannah's professional dancers from New York City, and the cellist and violinist from the Detroit Symphony Orchestra came over as well. And six movements that told the story of the Great Lakes through science, music, and dance. And we had professional narration from our own Roger Ellis, and we performed it once in Muskegon and once on campus last October, and it was a huge success. I think everybody was just overwhelmingly pleased, and now there's a request for us to reprise this, and so we're working on possibly performing this again in May in Grand Rapids and maybe out in one of the schools from GRPS as well.
Cool.
And, so much work has been put into it. It would be a shame not to be able to perform it to a wider venue and a wider audience. And the book is, a real page-turner. It's internal phosphorus loading from lakes around the world. So I'm still waiting on a few chapters from a few outposts, way in the global Netherlands, and not the Netherlands of Europe, but I'm talking about like Argentina and New Zealand, before we can put this one to rest with the publisher. And I'll be meeting with the publisher down in Florida at the end of the month as well to try and put the final earmarks on this book. And I'll be very glad when it goes to press and I don't have to worry about it anymore.
On to your next project. Well, you are a professor of water resources, so I see that as required reading. Hey, Rick Radiski testifies at a field hearing on PFAS.
Yeah, well, PFAS does not go away in this state. In fact, it continues to be front page news. But Senator Peters, our U.S. senator, had a field hearing here as part of his subcommittee back in November on the Grand Valley campus. We hosted that, and Rick was one of the featured speakers testifying at that and about the nature of the problem here in West Michigan, what needs to be done in terms of how we deal with this in the future, because this problem is not going away. We're finding more and more sites. Now that we know that some of the PFAS may be attached to the biosolid applications, from sludge, and the sludge has been applied everywhere, and so there's potential for the groundwater in each of these sludge application sites, largely for agricultural purposes. And so I think not just, in the past we were focused on the airports where they were using the foam to suppress fires, and also at military institutions, I'm under the weather and my mind is not working as it should be, but, the military installations that we have around the state, now it could be, in lots of different wells, domestic wells around the state as well. So I think we've really got our work cut out for us in identifying how pervasive this PFAS is. We talk about the PFOA and the PFAS as the two main parts of PFAS, but in fact there are thousands of different types of PFAS chemicals. And so how many do we look at? How expensive this has become? It's a huge, huge issue. And, the state is trying to get out in front of it, and I give them a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
But it's not going to go away.
Thank you for that. Lastly, so we can get you back into your healing mode, the new 2018 Year in Review is now available, Dr. Simon.
Every year, AWRI puts out our Year in Review. We have hard copies that we send to, 2,000 of our favorite friends, as well as it's online at the Institute. So if you go to our website at wri.gvsu.edu/wri, you can find the Year in Review there under Publications and download it yourself, or you can contact us, through the website or, give us a call, and we'll mail one to you. And it basically, it's a glossy, lots of pictures, not much text, but gives people an overview of what we're doing here at the Institute, the activities of our students and our faculty and our staff, and get a better sense of who we are and what we do. And so we're very happy to be able to disseminate that to whomever is interested in obtaining a copy. It's absolutely free.
Great. Looks like a great year. We are now officially in this 2019, so stay the course and speak with us every other month. Game?
Yeah, you got it, Shelley. My pleasure.
Dr. Simon, how do we find out more information about the Annis Water Resources Institute?
Well, the website I just listed, or give us a call. You can contact us at 616-331-3749 and talk to Roxana.
Great. Thanks. We'll speak again soon.
Thank you.
Take care.